He's my senator. Senator Ron Lantz is Senate District 46. He is the DFL lead in the Senate on the Judiciary and Public Safety Finance and Policy Committee. And he's kind enough to join us right now to talk about the wake of George Floyd and real police reform. Senator Lantz, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Good to be with you, Matt.
Good to be with you once again, sir. First of all, let me take your thoughts on in the year that just happened here in the wake of the death of George Floyd.
Oh, well, it's been a terrible year in so many ways. Obviously, the loss of life, the way it's happened, the impact on the communities. It clearly has spawned a spate of gun violence in the communities, for whatever reasons. It's proven to be a wake-up call, I think, for a lot of people who don't live this daily, but who are seeing it in the media, seeing it in the headlines, and who want to find a way to address the issues. So it's been a tough year, and when you add all the stress from the pandemic and the difficulty in getting together with people to solve problems, it makes it that much harder for everyone.
I think one of the end results lessons that we've learned is that white America can no longer ignore what black America has been experiencing for the last few hundred years. And I think that it was nice to get the guilty verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. But the reality is we have a lot of work to do in regards to, police accountability, because right now, after decades of Republican laws being passed, there is very little in the way of accountability in regards to the policing of the American citizens.
The verdict on the Derek Chauvin trial was accountability for that particular act, which will be visited upon Derek Chauvin and hopefully the other officers that were involved. But that doesn't bring justice in the bigger sense for the community. And that doesn't address the underlying issues, the issues that have to do with some police officers and their conduct toward communities of color, and issues which go beyond and are deeper than that as well. It's not only about the way the police officers handle things, and I should say not all police officers, but certainly some that do. There's a lot more going on in communities where there is some culture of violence and the easy availability of firearms that become, the first resort when there's a dispute. So we've got a lot to work on, and you're right. I mean, the greater community is more aware today than we were a year and a half ago about, what's happening in communities of color. On the other hand, we've had these awakenings repeatedly over the last many decades.
Yes.
Right? And they have not always spurred the kind of change that is necessary, the kind of investment in the communities that hasn't spurred changes in behavior as often as sometimes it spurred changes in laws. The mid-60s, we had a lot of civil unrest, and we passed a lot of anti-discrimination laws in the state and federally. Those have taken us a long way, but they haven't eliminated attitudes, and they haven't eliminated discrimination altogether.
I think
we still have a long way to go.
I think nothing sizes that up, and I was talking to my second favorite Minnesota Senator, Susan Kent, about this, about the fact you actually had a vote on the House, on the Senate floor, to basically say that if you're a part member of a white racist organization, a white power organization, that you cannot be a police officer. And not only did every Republican vote against that, but you had Warren Limmer, who is notorious for throwing policy issues into budget bills, all of a sudden scream, "You can't put a policy issue in a budget bill," which is just ludicrous, especially when it's kind of one of the most easy layups. But the reality is that moment, it showed me that even the most basic change that a member of the KKK or the Nazi party should not be a police officer, which I think we can all agree on, that the Republicans, that is a bridge too far for them. And in that Senate, that's what you've been, you yourself, I know, have been, you know, running up against that wall quite a bit.
It's tough on the forehead when you keep hitting the same wall. You would think that would be a no-brainer, and there are ways to formulate that particular provision so you don't start infringing on people's First Amendment rights. But, you know, when you accept a job as a law enforcement officer, you accept a certain standing in the community, and you carry certain responsibilities in the doing your duties that require a lot of trust and a lot of confidence and a willingness to share and to information and to acquiesce to authority. And you are absolutely and automatically disqualified, I would say, certainly compromised in your ability to do the job well if your attitude is one that is consistent with these white supremacy organizations, or frankly, any extremist groups for that matter, because you are going to be dealing with a lot of people in your community that those groups dislike. And you have to be able to bring with it a credibility and trust to do your job. So, you know, not every job, even though those kind of attitudes are abhorrent, not every job would, require someone not to be a part of those organizations. But certain jobs do, and I think that comes with the territory, and you have to accept that. And you have to be willing to say people who share those views shouldn't be in the position of trust and authority where they are given the legal authority to use deadly force against the citizenry.
I was looking earlier about, and I mentioned this on the air before we started talking, I was looking up at the Senate makeup on the Finance and Policy Committee, the Public Safety Committee, and it's clear from when you look at the Republican lineup on that committee, the entire point of it is to do nothing. I mean, it's Ingebretson's on there, Kiffmeyer's on there, of course Warren Limmer's on there, and I say to myself, if you walk in with people who are so entrenched in their mentality that they are not going to do anything to try to change the problem, I mean, is that really even making an attempt to address the problem?
I think the biggest difficulty is getting them to recognize that a problem exists in the first place, Matt.
Yeah.
Their life experience, their worldview is such that they don't see a lot of that. Senator Ingebretson spent a lifetime in law enforcement in the sheriff's office and then as the elected sheriff in his community. But he didn't deal with the kind of a diverse community that a lot of police officers deal with and a lot of communities experience. Senator Limmer is from Maple Grove, doesn't have the diversity in his community there either. And so they see the world differently. And if you're unable to recognize that there's a problem, to accept the legitimacy of views of other people of color who had different life experiences that, you know, grow up every day facing microaggressions or worse because of the color of their skin, you don't recognize there's a problem there. You've got no recognition that a solution needs to be found. And sometimes I think that they are there simply to say no because they're locked into their own worldview and they are incapable of the empathy or the recognition that something needs to be done. And unfortunately, they're in that position of power right now because they have the majority in the Senate.
You had mentioned earlier when we started talking about this is a multifaceted problem. And can we tackle the social and economic disparities that have existed in this country the redlining, the fact that the there's not as many good jobs in lower income communities. There's not as many good grocery stores or banks or any kind of infrastructure that can help these communities that is really in place. Can we make those steps? Can white America sit back and say, okay, it's over. We need to fix this and actually get it done.
Well, boy, that's the big question, isn't it, Matt?
Yes.
These are generations in the making. And I think there's a lot that government can do. We can change the laws. We can enforce new laws. But there's a lot that government is not equipped to do well either, that needs to come out of the communities too. And so it's going to take all of us, the communities that are in the situation, the communities around them, that can offer resources and support, you know, jobs, investment. It's a really broad issue that needs to be addressed, and we all have to try to pull in the same direction. It's hard when you're swimming upstream. It's hard when you got people that are pushing back, rather than all pulling the oar in the same direction. I think I'm an optimist by nature. I think we can make substantial progress, but it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of investment, and not just of money, but of other resources as well. And we can't rely on government alone to do it. It's going to take, you know, the private communities and nonprofits, the community organizations, as well. And it's going to take a lot of education, for, you know, but I think it can be done. But it's not going to happen overnight. You know, we have to make changes on the policy level, but it's going to take, you know, a long, long time to make the kind of progress that we would like to see. But it's urgent.
Yeah.
It's urgent because every day that goes by, there are lives lost to gun violence. There are lives degraded to law enforcement overreach. There are, you know, lives that slip through the cracks. And that means every day that we make progress, we're saving lives, and we need to do that.
Senator Ron Latz, Senator, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time today and your thoughts and your insights. All my best on the good fight in the Senate, my friend.
Thanks, Matt. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. Senator Ron Latz, kind enough to join us. He said education at the end. Here's the most important thing. You have to convince all white people of the following thing. Giving other people the same opportunities that you've had is not giving them a foot up. It is basically giving them the same opportunities you had. Hour 2, Patrick Cooligan, other guests as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.